The opinions expressed on the following program do not necessarily reflect the views of KTXT, its management, Texas Tech University, or any living person. You're listening to Anthony Pipes Hall and Kelly Dr. K. Caulfield, and this is the Devil's Advocate.
Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste.
Hey, everybody, welcome to The Devil's Advocate on KTXT, The Raider 88.1.
He's Anthony Hall.
Would you let me introduce myself? I'm Tony, and I'm going to introduce you. I'm Tony. This is Dr. K from the College of Media and Communications right here.
Hey, gang, how are you?
We're going to got a great show for you today. We're going to be all over the place.
We are kind of all over the world.
It's going to be great. Stay tuned for the international edition of the Lightning Round later on in the show. That's going to be great.
That is fun, actually. We have some interesting topics lined up. So
it's going
to
be great.
As always with our policy, we aim to entertain and inform you at the same time. So we're going to share some interesting information you may not have heard about immigration, about some countries you don't think about too much, about some leadership changes overseas that could affect the world. It'd be interesting.
It's going to be the 2010s are going to be very interesting for the world, I think.
Here's my tease for later in the show. Some of these countries have nuclear weapons, so you'll want to pay attention because we'll talk about changes in leadership in those places.
You don't want to be uncertain who's got their hands on those these days. So, but we're going to bring it back home real quick for a little while, talk about something we're all rather familiar with.
Let me get over here in the corner. I'm going off by myself.
What's wrong? Like, where are you going?
Well, I feel like I should be sequestered. doesn't that mean like off by yourself in a corner?
Something like that. I think that's like quarantine.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that's quarantine I'm thinking of. I don't know.
But that was last week's joke.
Yeah, but we're all sequestered as of Friday, March 1st, which is a week and a half ago.
Which means that we all fell over the fiscal cliff.
Yeah, that's why, as I understand it, I'm not getting paid to teach anymore this week.
Thank God.
I always say you get what you pay for, right? And so now you're thinking, yeah, we finally do. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's about right. So we fell over the fiscal cliff. We're going to talk about the things that were cut, basically everything.
Well, but I can still put gas in my car, right? Planes are flying. Teachers are still working. You still have the job at the hub. I mean, I don't know. I don't know.
So, are you trying to say it's not as bad as we may think it is?
It wasn't catastrophic or world ending. I can say that.
Sorry. You want to come talk about politics?
Yeah, come on, come talk about politics.
She has a test.
Okay.
Lame. So. Okay. Nice.
We left our door open on purpose for the random interaction.
Yeah, we're gonna try to bring some people in here today on our show.
Unless they run screaming like she did.
Yeah, she got out of here pretty fast.
I don't blame her.
So where were we? We were talking about the sequester.
Yeah. Now, how much has it affected? Has it affected a lot? And this is again. Here's the reminder: $1.2 trillion over 10 years that could affect all kinds of stuff. About $600 billion military spending. About $600 billion domestic spending. Again, spread over a decade. This was the compromise agreed to because they couldn't actually agree to anything last August 2011 and put this in place in case these cuts were considered so draconian that they would force Democrats and Republicans.
But at the same time, while they may be, quote, draconian, as you like to say, like I found out that's like his favorite word to describe anything we do in government, it's not to the important things. It's not to Social Security. It's barely to defense, especially our actual standing military. Those are the big Democratic and big Republican cash cows.
The third rails, the untouchables, exactly.
Right. So,
although the military was supposed to be the Republican untouchable, and yet they agreed to $600 billion over 10 years.
Right. But at the same time, $600 billion to our defense over 10 years is like tiny. And even then, does it really affect our standing army? Like, will a sergeant in Afghanistan be affected by this at all? Or is it just private contractors like Boeing?
And it turns out it's private contractors like Boeing, and perhaps not even Boeing. So your soldiers will still be in uniform. They'll still have bullets to shoot, but they may have to cook their own food because the contractor who did that for them may be out of work eventually.
So
the point is the cuts didn't happen all at once, and even this year's cuts, about $85 billion, didn't happen all at once. They'll phase in over the next 8 months.
So if they are two things that aren't, say, Social Security and the standing army, what kind of teeth does a sequester really have for either side?
You're going to bring up that number from last week, aren't you? That only 28% of the federal budget was ever subject to the
sequestration. And then only 10% of it was actually sequestered.
We should have replayed George Kennedy again this week.
We were going to, and you're like, oh, I didn't want to do it.
He only has a 50-50 chance, but there's only a 10% chance of that. It's a great quote from the movie Airplane. That's a little bit like what's going on here. We're basically talking about 2.8% of the federal budget is being faced by the sequester. We're not eliminating, mind you, 2.8% of federal spending. It's just that only 2.8% of the entire federal government is even subject to the sequester, and so only a little bit's being cut. Put it in perspective, the military spends about $600 billion a year just on their standing budget. So this year's cut to military spending is going to be on the order of, I think, $40 billion a year. So it's about on the order of 5%, maybe less, of military spending.
So this won't, like we mentioned, just to reaffirm, we're not going to be losing body
armor. Maybe 8%. Yeah, those aircraft carriers we alluded to last week actually did not sink in port. They're not gone
yet
off the face of the earth.
Although, you know, I saw a picture, actually.
I did see the movie Battleship last night on cable.
How was it?
You know, it's one of those huge...
Today on the Devil's Advocate movie reviews.
Yeah, over the top. I don't know if you like these. One of these hugely over the top action movies.
Oh,
was
I love
just
those.
Outrageous. Yeah, see, so it's made for you. It's not made for me.
Awesome.
Yeah, you might like it then. It's actually pretty
I'll check
fun.
It out. Okay, so...
But it
next
has some
movie.
Entertaining twists. Okay, sorry.
No, it's okay. What was I talking about? See, we went off on battle. Oh, that's right. I saw this very interesting picture on Facebook, actually, that was of those aircraft carriers in port. Now, it might have been Photoshopped. It might not have been. But it was funny because the picture was like one of those photos that like a really anti-president group will use. And it said, does this look familiar? And it had a picture of the Battleship Row from Pearl Harbor next to it. And it was like, weren't we not supposed to do this? And I was like, guys, it's like a repair port. And like, what else are they going to do with them? Like repair them on the high seas?
Exactly. One of the ships that is at issue for these, and they were talking, and the president mentioned this in his speech a couple weeks ago. He talked about one ship was going to be delayed and not put back in active service. It's already in, not in dry dock, but it's already in port for a refit. And when you refit a nuclear aircraft carrier, it takes a few years. You have to pull a lot of things out. The fuel has to go out. You have to refurbish the motors. Modern aircraft carriers, nuclear aircraft carriers, are electric boats. They don't have gas engines. Here's a piece of trivia for anybody who's a big military buff. Aircraft carriers, U.S. aircraft carriers, have the largest bunkers, the largest fuel tanks on board of any ships in any navy in the world, but they don't use it. It's all fuel for their escort ships, their battleships, destroyers, etc., that sail along with them. The aircraft carrier fuels its own escorts. It's pretty funny.
Wow,
but
that's really cool, actually.
It runs on nuclear power on General Electric electric motors. It's pretty funny.
This segment of The Devil's Advocate brought to you by General Electric.
And by Boeing. It's funny because actually...
Battleship.
I think I still own stock in General Electric, but don't tell anybody. Anyway, the...
look at the 1% over here.
The ship was already in port for a refit, and a refit, you know, it's a crew of 5,000 sailors. It already takes 3 or 4 years to refit one of those. Now it might take 6 years because it's already not in service. So that's an obvious target for setting it aside and saving the money on not spending it on that. Why not spend the money for needs on active ships and keep them sailing?
But they're not going to just take that ship and scuttle it.
Yeah, they're not going to.
That's not what the sequester is
going to
do.
They're not going to sink it or cut it up and sell it for scrap metal or anything like that. So
buy your own piece of the aircraft carrier sunk yesterday
on
eBay.
That might raise money, actually.
I'd do it.
Yeah, that might be a good way to do it. So a couple interesting proposals my wife has said
for years.
Why
aren't we in the government?
You know, exactly. But then who would vote for us?
That's
true. And could we get past the background check? I think not. A suggestion my wife has made often is, what do you do with your own home budget when times are tight? You cut, you quit going out to dinner, you might have a garage sale, you might sell some things, you might sell one of your two cars. And she's had this proposal for years. The government has this huge store of surplus stuff. Chairs, computers. I hope they don't sell an aircraft carrier. But think of all the things they could sell that they're just not using anymore, that are mothballed, that are sitting in closets. And I mean, it's an interesting idea, and it's not going to save $1 trillion. And
the
and
United
cover
States
our,
official garage sale.
Our entire deficit. But it'd be interesting to set up sort of a government version of eBay where people could go on and bid and buy stuff. Why not? It's an interesting idea.
I'd do it.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk a little bit more coming up about some details about sequestration. Plans are cut. And then I'm going to bring up one of my most least favorite economists, depending on the coin flip.
Most least.
And we'll see how it goes. And then some other interesting stuff. Like I say, the first ever international lightning round, and that'll be fun. We've got some interesting topics on deck for that one. And you're sure to agree or disagree with one or both of us, so make sure you pay attention.
It's definitely going to be me either side that I pick.
And then there's a local issue right here on campus that's gotten a little bit of attention.
So local.
You might want to go to ttuhub.net and take a look at some of the coverage on this little, just a little contentious issue. This is the kind of stuff, if this happened in the U.S. Senate, oh my God, it would be Watergate times 10.
That's why it's so awesome.
Yeah,
so if you want to get in on that, stay tuned right here to the Devil's Advocate on the Raider 88.1. Welcome back to The Devil's Advocate here on KTXT, The Raider 88.1 with Tony and Dr. K.
Can we just play that song? I love that song.
Yeah, we were in here just jamming to it.
Yeah, we didn't have that last week, and I actually requested it. I'm like, that is my favorite.
He was like, do you know that song that goes, dun, 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 dun?
Don't get old. You forget things. It's bad.
So, we got, 10, 15 minutes in the show. We haven't gotten to something very important as part of the Devil's Advocate.
Oh, yeah. We do this every week, and I think some people listen just for this, so we try to use it as a hook to keep you sticking around. We do have a show montage.
We have a couple tricks.
Not just yet, though, so we're going to do something a little different. We're going to flip a coin. We have a special coin. What was this one?
This is the Korean won.
Yeah, the Chosun won. I thought, Tony, aren't you the Chosun won?
Okay, so some of our students are going to run up here and be like, that's so racist.
I understand. They'll come yell at us, but I'm just having a little fun. We have a North Korean won, which is the currency. There's a reason for it. We'll allude to that later, but we're going to flip this coin today to decide who's going to be liberal, who's going to be conservative. Tony, do you want to call it this time?
Is there a heads or a tails on a won?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so I'm going to go conservative heads.
Okay, so heads, Tony's conservative, and here comes the coin flip. And the won says heads.
I'll take
conservative.
It.
Okay.
Boom.
Tony's conservative. I'll be the liberal. Listen to this week's montage on sequestration with the president. We had a little fun with this one. We'll do some prep, and we'll talk to you in about a minute and a half.
Washington sure isn't making it easy. At a time when our businesses have finally begun to get some traction, hiring new workers, bringing jobs back to America, we shouldn't be making a series of dumb, arbitrary cuts to things that businesses depend on.
The American people know that Washington has a spending problem.
Let's be clear. None of this is necessary. It's happening because a choice that Republicans in Congress have made.
Let's make it clear that the president got his tax hikes on January 1st.
Take me away. I don't mind. But you better promise me I'll be back in time.
This discussion about revenue, in my view, is over. It's about taking on the spending problem here in Washington.
The pain, though, will be real. Beginning this week, many middle-class families will have their lives disrupted.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
And I'm hopeful that we won't have to deal with the threat of a government shutdown while we're dealing with the sequester at the same time.
It will cost about 750,000 jobs at a time when we should be growing jobs more quickly.
We're sending you back to the future!
Next week, we're sending you back to the future. I'm actually on my feet in
oh
here.
Oh my God, that was amazing. See, he surprises me with these every week. He does them at like 1 in the morning, and he's like, guys, you're going to love the montage today.
Not by choice. It's because we had a great time yesterday enjoying the Reaching Audiences Conference, which ended yesterday. It ran Monday and Tuesday this week, and a lot
Thank
of fun.
Thank you to Dr. Todd Chambers for getting us all in on that.
Well, I'm glad he invited you, and it was organized by Drs. Kent Wilkinson and Eric Busey, our two Regents professors here in the College of Media Communication, brought a bunch of professionals in advertising, marketing, especially reaching Hispanic audiences. There's our little plug for that. But we had a lot of fun in that conference, but it kept me much too busy and up much too late. So I edited audio way past my bedtime.
Yeah, which is only like 7 or 8 o'clock.
Exactly. I fall asleep on the sofa at 8 o'clock. Exactly right. So the reason I had a little fun with Back in Time is because we're still talking about this ridiculous issue that started in August of 2011.
Which is their inability to reach a conclusion about the United States budget.
You know, there's this argument that there are some people on both sides who say they're for the sequester, that they were all for it, Democrats and Republicans. Give you an idea, there weren't really serious talks. There was one meeting at the White House that the president hosted on Friday, March 1st, the day the sequester was supposed to take effect, trying to get some help from leadership on your side. And of course, he didn't get any. And
so
he had no choice but to sign the sequester into law on Friday.
Well, because we've, like Mr. Boehner said, we've already done our tax increases. Now, just as you alluded to with Nuri earlier, we have to start cutting in the budget. We have to. Because you can't just make up all the money.
But in a time of historic problems in the economy, I mean, look, let me walk down some of the things that the sequester is going to affect.
Okay, please.
So some of the Defense Department employees we mentioned earlier, a lot of the civilian contractors, as many as 800,000 employees could face problems. I'm actually traveling this Sunday on an international flight. I may have twice the line I usually have because some of the...
Oh,
for crying out loud. Yeah, like it's already pleasant to go through Homeland Security.
Look, the 1% over here has stock in General Electric and is going to Italy. Like, for real. Do you need any more proof that this man does not belong on the radio?
Okay, so if you will come
and
around...
And he's not even a job creator.
If you will come around on your sides and just pay your fair share of taxes like I do, we wouldn't have these problems. So,
paying way too many taxes.
Airline delays, some cancellations. Some air traffic controllers, actually, could be eliminated. So I think that'd be interesting.
Well, from what I understand, from what the media was telling me before, they were just sleeping on the job anyway.
Oh, for crying out loud. You believe
That's
what you
what
see
I
in the media,
hear.
Too? Okay, I'm going to have to check your sources. Didn't you get in trouble for citing Huffington Post as HuffPo in a paper recently?
Okay, no.
Let's talk about citations.
That's official.
In the journalism program. Half a million children.
Oh, man, Bruton's going to get up here. He already said he was going to try to crash our show one day.
Would love that. Half a million children might get dropped from Head Start programs, preschool programs that get people off on good starts. Even service members might have problems with some of their health insurance, some other issues like that. These are serious cuts. They're going to have a big impact on the economy. And in a time of historic downturn, look, the government needs to spend money. It needs to be investing in these programs. We've just got to have some more revenue. I wish you 1%ers wouldn't just be so intransigent about it. That's another word. Draconian and intransigent. Love those.
We had another triple word score today. What was it, like profligate or something?
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was in one of the articles. I love that. You were trying to make the argument that that the government is a profligate spender, and I was saying, no, that's actually not true at all, that we've actually chipped away at the deficit already under current economic circumstances. One of the big problems is
I cannot believe you say that with a straight face.
Tremendous layoffs from municipal and state governments who've been just eviscerated, there's another one for you, by these cutbacks, by this loss in revenue, and it's contributing to unemployment. And the problem is, of course, when people are out of work, they don't have paychecks, they aren't buying gas, they aren't shopping for groceries, it hurts the whole economy, it spreads. So let's do this. Let's play the president. The president on sequestration. He has some insight, as usual, on it, and as always, is well spoken and well informed.
Sometimes you just make me stare at you, like just the one eye.
Wish I could get my wife to do that, but okay.
Washington sure isn't making it easy. At a time when our businesses have finally begun to get some traction, hiring new workers, bringing jobs back to America, we shouldn't be making a series of dumb, arbitrary cuts to things that businesses depend on. Let's be clear, none of this is necessary. It's happening because a choice that Republicans in Congress have made. The pain, though, will be real. Beginning this week, many middle-class families will have their lives disrupted. It will cost about 750,000 jobs at a time when we should be growing jobs more quickly. Hundreds of thousands of Americans who serve their country, Border Patrol agents, FBI agents, civilians who work at the Pentagon, all will suffer significant pay cuts and furloughs. They've allowed these cuts to happen because they refuse to budge on closing a single wasteful loophole to help reduce the deficit. I do believe that we can and must replace these cuts with a more balanced approach that asks something from everybody. Smart spending cuts, entitlement reform, tax reform that makes the tax code more fair for families and businesses without raising tax rates.
So, I have a couple issues with this. Number one, I'm going to stop letting you put together our montages and our sound clips because you keep choosing these very subjective things with these very offensive language.
Could you use words like draconian and...
No.
Okay.
You have to use words like dumb and...
The president used that word.
Yeah, the president used dumb and loopholes.
I think he was referring to your party when he used that word, but okay. These dumb spending...
Okay, look. Okay. Look, I'm going to lay this down for you. Ready?
Okay.
Actually, I got nothing. No, I'm kidding. all that built up. Here's the thing, okay? The president is saying all this about us, like about the Republican Party in Congress.
Yeah, step up to the table. Do something.
Stop. We already agreed to a tax increase. That is as far as we should go. Because when he talks about a more balanced approach, he said we're going to do tax increases and spending cuts. And we have done our tax increases. Now it is time for you to own up and do the spending cuts.
My favorite quote. Oh, for crying out loud. So last year, Speaker Boehner was all about my Ohio homeboy, I like to remind people, was all about closing loopholes so that Mitt Romney can't keep money in offshore accounts in the Cayman Islands.
First of all.
Hands up.
Yes. First of all, how are these loopholes? Like we said last week, these are passed by the Congress. They are written out in the tax code. These are not dirty tricks. These are official things inside the tax code that are used to stimulate the economy and grow businesses, grow the people who create your jobs.
Yeah, and the guy cooking your burgers down at McDonald's, he can take advantage of these loopholes and send some of his money to offshore accounts over to Switzerland and the Cayman Islands.
Offshore accounts.
These are purely for special interests. The wealthy work these things in and they're in place. And again, the Republicans had loopholes on the table last year, all the way from August, all the way through last year. And they make this one concession on a little bit of the top 1%, which is they're not even going to feel it. They're still going to be driving their yachts and flying their private airplanes. And now all they're trying to do is find a way to level the playing field a little bit more, get a little more revenue, again, in a time of historic economic downturn, when all these people are out of work in government jobs, D.C. and all around the country. You know, what's happening in the municipalities in the states, they've had a huge number of layoffs. You know, they just can't afford to pay their bills in those places. They're being torn up, and it has this ripple effect.
I'm crying.
Yeah, figures.
Like, I bet you can hear it.
That's
in
your
my
problem.
Voice.
You're heartless.
Okay, so you're talking about state and municipal governments having to lay off their workers. You just said a second ago that businesses should take these hits, but if you're going to talk about complaints about the municipal and
I don't
state
think
governments,
businesses should take hits. Millionaires should take hits.
But they,
why in the world can't
the millionaires
Bill Gates pay a little
are more? The businesses. Like if you're going to take money from the corporations that use these tax breaks that you just mentioned, you're going to be taking away from their profits, which is going to take away from their employment power. So they will have to lay off workers.
So I'm wondering how much of Mitt Romney's $100 million or so in annual revenue that he gets just from investments on dividends, et cetera, employs people. There's some rich banker that gets employed by him, but I suspect that's about it. So, no, I take it back. There probably are some people in the Cayman Islands and in Swiss banks that are getting paid by him.
Stop. Okay, look, I'm going to need some backup on this, and he's going to tell you just how this is supposed to go. So,
let's go to the Speaker.
Yeah, the Speaker of the House, Boehner.
Okay.
Let's make it clear that the president got his tax hikes on January 1st. This discussion about revenue, in my view, is over. It's about taking on the spending problem here in Washington. I did lay out that the House is going to move a continuing resolution next week to fund the government past March 27th. And I'm hopeful that we won't have to deal with the threat of a government shutdown while we're dealing with the sequester at the same time. The House will act next week, and I hope the Senate will follow suit. Thanks.
Okay, first of all, I
can't believe
you
guys are talking about shutting down the government again like you did back in the 90s.
Oh, because it's our fault. Okay, first of all, before we get into that, I just want to mention that that entire clip was filled with nothing but, like, photographers. Like,
it's true.
He must have given that quote, like, on the steps of the Capitol building or something.
He did, actually.
Because
yeah.
I could hear all my friends in the journalism industry. Click, 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 click.
Nice.
Okay,
exactly.
So, now, he said exactly what I said. At the beginning, we gave the president our tax increases.
I gave it the office. Your children can starve. Okay, fine.
Oh, please. Now, okay, look. So here's my question. I'm going to give this one to you because you just alluded to it. If, quote, the government was to shut down, what would that entail? Would that be furloughs for government employees like we had a couple years ago?
Yeah.
Would it be a cessation of services?
No, we had a shutdown in, let's see, it would have been 96. No, it must have been 94.
I thought we had a big furlough just a couple of years ago.
Well, we had a small furlough, but it mostly affected like national parks, and it wasn't that huge a deal. And in fact, one of the things on the table for the current sequestration is a revolving furlough. So people would work Monday through Thursday and stay home Friday. They wouldn't get paid, but they'd get a three-day weekend out of it. But look, how are they going to then pay their bills if they're losing one day of pay per week? And, you know, it has huge impact on lots of people. And because it's set up that way, it would affect a lot more people than if you, and this is also a bad answer, but if you just got rid of those people altogether and saved all the money on their
Why
job.
Why is Dr. Chambers staring at us?
I don't know. He should come in and join us, but he can't hear us out in the hallway.
I was trying to like get him to come in here. Oh, yeah. Here he comes.
Oh, he's coming. That would be fun. We'll get Dr.
Ladies
Chambers
and gentlemen,
to
you're going to hear an opinion from Dr. Todd Chambers on the sequester.
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to come in here and join us.
He should.
We'll see. But
keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah, the furlough, I think, is an interesting idea. But the government shutdown I'm talking about was led by the Republicans after the 1994 majority when they won the House back. In Bill Clinton's midterm, and it was actually a huge impact on government, and the Republicans irresponsibly just refused to spend money and shut down the government. You tried the same thing last year with the refusal to raise the debt ceiling. You just didn't want to do it. So, hey, let's have Dr. Chambers say hi, since he's in here and we're recording.
And we're twins.
How are you?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
we're matching
in uniform.
Shirts and everything.
I'm good.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the chairman of the Department of Journalism and Electronic Media, Todd Chambers, joining us in the studio today.
Here in the College of Media and Communication. Thanks. How are you?
Olo. I'm good.
Olo?
Yeah, it's been one of those days. Yesterday, we just wrapped up the Reaching Audiences conference. How did that go, like, for the department?
You know, it was amazing. You know, Monday and Tuesday this week was, I think, just almost norm for us now, but the College of Media and Communications, along with the Institute for Hispanic and International Communication, and both our Regents professors here in the college, Dr. Eric Busey and Dr. Kent Wilkinson, they hosted a conference here, and it sort of paralleled with a couple of lecture series that we host here in the college, the Catherine Bessler lecture at lunch, and then again, the Morris Distinguished Lecture in the evening. So we cram-packed all of this stuff in 2 days. But
very busy couple of days.
It's been really cool. I think I've seen a lot of students, I've seen a lot of faculty, and I've seen the participants really enjoy it. We've had some really huge names here. Betsy Frank, who is the head of research for Time Inc. There's Allison Bryant, and she is well known for her research related to Nickelodeon. She's broken off and has her own company called Play Science. But then we have experts, Hispanic audiences, had the publisher for Hispanic Market Weekly.
Yeah, along with VR was in, right?
Along very with, good talker. Yeah,
along with the author of The Whole Enchilada. I don't know if you are familiar at all with Hispanic marketing, that text should be very familiar to you. So anyway, we had several panelists here sharing their thoughts and ideas. Everything from Hispanics and media and marketing to social media and three screens and all that.
Boy, the robust social media play. And
what was
big thanks
so
to
Solo-co? Like that.
Solo-co. I think that's it's extremely important.
Solo-mo.
Solo-mo. Social, local, mobile. And I think that's one of the big takeaways I took out of it. But the goal of this was actually to create a discourse. More of an opportunity for scholars from the academic side and industry researchers from the profession to come together and really start tackling something we've been talking about for decades. And we've got some synergy going, and that's one of the things that Dr. Busey and Dr. Wilkinson sort of capitalized on and wanted to leverage right now in spring of 2013 and right here at Texas Tech. And I think that's the cool thing that we're seeing here in our College of Media Communication. And so it's real exciting. A lot of great initiatives going on. We had reporters from KTXT covering the events. We also had reporters from the Hub at TTU.edu, or how about the Hub, TTUHub.net, the Hub. New student initiative here in the college. Plus, we launched our social media monitoring lab, which is on the second floor of this building. And again, things are happening. So
kudos to public relations chair Trent Seltzer. Dr. Seltzer had a big hand in the social media.
It's going to be great. Like, we noticed it while we were covering some events for the Hub yesterday.
It's a neat facility.
Very, very busy on social media.
Well, it is a wonderful, wonderful time to be a student. And it doesn't matter if you're a major in media and communication or not, because everyone participates in social networks. Mobile, and you're accessing it through mobile technology. We see the influence in marketing. We see the influence in political science. We see the influence all over the place. And so I think this is one of those exciting times that we have to kind of share with the rest of the campus community and also the scholarly community out there that, hey, we got it going on here at Texas Tech.
That's right.
We should do something mobile with the class. We might want to think about that.
You think?
Yeah, I think that'd be a good idea.
You think?
That sounds like a pretty sweet idea. We may have to pitch that to somebody to teach a class on social journalism sometime.
Huh. Yeah. I wonder who's doing that this semester,
journalism.
Maybe.
Maybe something on smartphones.
Okay. Maybe we'll resurrect that in the fall. Mobile journalism, storytelling by smartphone, underway now at the College of Media and Communication.
Taught by Dr. Coffles.
That's right.
Oh. Well, thanks a lot, Dr. Chambers. That was awesome.
We
enjoy
you
stopping by
in
all the time.
Hey, I can top my head off. Thank y'all.
we appreciate
great.
It. Hey, thanks very much. And
we're going to hit a break, and we're going to come back to a very local segment about something very important that we talked about earlier.
Yeah, that one's big.
Yeah. So come back to the Devil's Advocate on KTXT The Raider 88.1.
And then we'll take you around the world.
Down to Georgia, he was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sawing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, "Boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too. And if you'd care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle of gold against your soul because I think I'm better than you." The boy said, "My name's Johnny, and it might be a sin, but I'll take your bet and you're gonna regret, cause I'm the best as ever been. Johnny, rosin up your bow and play your fiddle hard, cause hell's broke loose in Georgia and the devil deals the cards. And if you win, you get this shiny fiddle made of gold, but if you lose, the devil gets your soul." The summed up his case and he said, I'll start this show. And fire flew from his fingertips as he rosined up his bow. And he pulled the bow across the strings and it made an evil hiss. And then a band of demons joined in and it sounded something like this. Finished, Johnny said, well, you're pretty good, old son, but sit down in that chair right there and let me show you how it's done. Fire on the mountain, run, boys, run. The devil's in the house of the rising sun. Chicken in the bread pan, picking out dough. Granny, let your dog bite, no child, no.
So speaking of that awesome music, 24/7 you can listen to KTXC 88.1. Well, okay, not 24/7 because we host the BBC, but we have a lot of awesome new music from our new music director here at KTXT. He's been putting out some really awesome jams lately.
Yeah, nicely done.
Okay, so welcome back to the Devil's Advocate here on KTXT The Raider 88.1 with Tony and Dr. K.
I'm casting some votes over here. Give me a second. Let me vote what a second time.
Okay, speaking of that, you're not allowed to vote until 20th.
Until Sunday. But why follow the rules now? I'm just going to go ahead and keep voting.
Oh, that was cold. I didn't even say it. So here is the deal. The Texas Tech Student Government Association elections were last week, Wednesday and Thursday.
I'm just kidding, folks. I'm just kidding.
That was cold. Yeah. Like, if any of them were listening, cold. Okay.
Just hope they have a sense of humor. Sorry.
Yeah, me too. The elections were held Wednesday and Thursday. The results were announced on Friday. Now, Luke Cotton...
But that wasn't the end of the election.
No, actually, it wasn't. Luke Cotton, Jill Berger, and Logan Dickinson won the election, along with Daniel Yates for graduate vice president, but his position was uncontested.
The Raiders United Coalition.
That's right. I think it was Wednesday, the opposing bloc, Bridge the Gap, actually filed a motion with the Election Commission accusing them of breaching the election code in several different ways. That hearing was held Sunday night. I was there, of course, for the hub, ttuhub.net.
It was late, too, 9 to 11
yes,
Sunday night. And a lot of students were there. It was a full house.
It was actually really, like, I expected it to be mostly empty, but the Senate room was full. Every seat was taken. There were some people standing in the back
watching.
Which
is a great testament to your interest in and involvement with politics here on campus. So kudos to students for showing up to that.
Yeah, it's a little known secret that people actually care. Excuse me. It's a well-hidden secret that students actually care about student government, which is surprising considering several executives and other senators inside SGA say that their reputation with the students and their reach is actually very limited. Now, last year...
So I got an email last week during the election. Should I mention this?
No.
I live in a certain apartment complex.
Yes.
And an email came out. Should I wait? Should I let you tell that story?
Did you get that email?
Like, I did.
Seriously?
Yeah. Yeah, let me call it up.
That's amazing. Okay, so last Sunday at the hearing, it was revealed that Raiders United sent out a spam email endorsed by the University Fountains leasing office, and it was sent out to anybody who lived in that residence, like block apartments or whatever. And this is apparently against, okay, not apparently, this is against the rules in the SGA election code, which are a lot different than, say, the United States election code, because you can spam all day in that election, as far as I know. And can you?
I don't know, but if you and I ever run for anything in Miami, there just really aren't any rules there, so don't worry about it.
I will remember that. So if I ever want public office, go to Miami.
Yeah, I've been back in Texas for 7 years, and I still vote in Miami every year. So, no, I'm kidding.
I was going to say, there are no rules over there. So it was revealed that they sent out this email to all the residents at University Fountains. Now I know where you live.
Uh-oh. Better move.
And in addition to that...
One of our residents is running for internal vice president in the student government elections today. We think it's very important that everyone vote in this election and support our resident and her team. Two
name
other
redacted.
Names. And there they are. The name's here, actually. I'm just trying to be polite.
I know.
But yeah, they came right out and not only suggested you vote, but vote for these candidates for this coalition.
And it says... specifically inside the election code that sending out spam messages to encourage people to vote generally or vote for a candidate, God forbid if you do both, is distinctly against the election code. Now, at the same time, one of the other candidates posted in a private Facebook group saying that if you give them your e-rater information, they will vote for you. Now, this is not only against the election code.
It seems really convenient.
It's, doesn't it? It's against the student code of conduct. So this candidate was removed from running for SGA election, like office at all this year, pending a hearing, from what I understand. I'd have to confirm that. But the end result was filed Monday morning. Bright and early, 7:30 a.m. or something, and it said that Raiders United, the executive positions, were disqualified from the elections. And since a majority vote is required to fill the position, they will have to hold a second election in the next couple of weeks, with the voting supposed to be held the 20th and the 21st. Now, to show the timetable for this, Monday night, the Student Supreme Court ordered a restraining order on all SGA elections pending a hearing tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, in the old Board of Regents room inside the administration building. This is really awesome because we're finally getting to see what the judicial branch of SGA actually does. This will be the second case they've heard this year, with the first one back in the summer between Alex Alston and SGA. The current president of the student body, actually. So we're going to hopefully find out tomorrow night what the decision is going to be. It's actually an appellate case from the Election Commission between Luke Cotton, the leader of Raiders United, and Forrest Stovall, the leader of Bridge the Gap. Now, the little lesser-known third-party candidate, Jose Barraza, with the smaller block, literally only one guy running for it, Raiders Voice filed against Raiders United as well. But the result of that hearing, as far as I know, is not being appealed because Jose's brief, his case, was put down by the Election Commission.
Now, we should make it clear, and I'll ask you this question. And by the way, you should follow Anthony's excellent coverage on ttuhub.net, which has been very, very nice coverage, very comprehensive coverage of student government going all the way back into last semester, but of this issue in particular. So go check it out, ttuhub.net. Also, our friend of the show, Sydney Holmes, who joined us last week, often publishes work there.
It's very funny.
It's where our daily student
funny,
newscast goes. So yeah, there's some fun stuff there. Make sure you check it out, ttuhub.net.
We also do a daily 10 Things to Know Monday through Friday, and each day you get a different dose of what each of our editors think is important.
And it's good show prep for us. It's nice here.
Yeah, it really is. We actually used it today. Thanks, Sydney.
Yeah, exactly. Well done. These candidates, and we want to be careful here, nobody's exactly eliminated now from contention. These very same candidates likely will be back on the ballot for the subsequent election.
Except one of them.
Okay, right.
One of them was eliminated.
Except for the one who offered very conveniently to vote for you.
That's right.
You shared your
and we are looking forward to the next
and again
election.
That case is being investigated, so we're not casting aspersions or convicting anybody. It's
we're not trying to stick anybody up on the cross. These are the facts.
We may well see the same candidates back, and as I understand it, a person from one coalition could win president, someone else from a different coalition
That's right.
could win
it
internal
is,
vice
it
president.
It is not block voting like Ford is for our national elections, where you vote for one, you get the entire row. You vote for a president, you vote for an
external vice president. Right.
And an internal vice president. Yeah. And they can be from either block. So you could have a Raiders Voice president, a Raiders United internal vice president, and a Bridge of the Gap external vice president. It is entirely possible.
Which might be a nice way to be highly representative of what we basically have in the national government now.
Yeah.
Coalitions.
So you would get nowhere.
Exactly.
Welcome to student government.
And that's okay. That's not a bad thing. I feel bad for Stuart Williams, who I think maybe left the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court a little too early. I think he really would have enjoyed being in the middle of this, I think.
We may have to get him back on the show, but we'll have to plan a light show so we can give him enough room.
He is an artful and confident speaker, and it does not take much to get him going. Very well informed. And so, yeah, it makes our life easier because we don't have to work as hard. When
that week, we'll just be like, oh, don't worry, guys. We got Stuart coming.
Exactly. We'll do a show open and Stuart can go. So, but no, it'd be a very good topic for him to discuss. It'd be really interesting to see. So,
yeah,
it's an interesting case. It's a really interesting year to watch student government. We hope you're watching closely because it has been a great lesson in democracy up close and personal.
Yeah, right in your own backyard. And it's in prepping for the show last night, or excuse me, yes, last night in prepping for the show.
Minutes ago. In prepping for the show minutes ago.
Don't let them know that. We plan days ahead. In prepping for the show, I sent out an email to all the candidates, as well as the election chairman, Brad Schneers, and I included you on this email because I thought you might be interested in what I was doing. I didn't want to just spring it on you behind your back, as well as the PR director for SGA, Zach Haber. And I said, you know, guys, we host a show, and we would like for all of you to come on. And this morning I got a response back from each of them saying
they politely declined, and yes, they all cited a very, very good reason.
Because the Supreme Court put a restraining order on the election, so no campaigning and no discussing the election at all, or else you will be disqualified. So kudos on them for making that decision. We totally respect them for it, but it made our show a little lighter today.
Well, and they were all very polite about it and clearly made good sense. I don't know if you've ever seen this in news coverage. You'll see someone say, look, we can't discuss ongoing legal matters. The judge has squelched any discussion of that. This is akin to that. It's our student legislative equivalent of that, which is they just are not allowed to discuss it until all the details are settled out. And again, nobody is in particular trouble. We're just sort of trying to sort out and what's going to happen next. And what's going to happen next is a second election, which I'd seen somewhere could happen as early as Sunday. But now you're saying more likely the 20th or later?
The election was slated originally to start the 6th, which is when they were going to be able to start campaigning.
Today.
Right. Then the actual voting would be the 20th and the 21st.
Okay. So campaigning would start today, and then the election is right after spring break.
Right. But now with the restraining order set, the campaign is not allowed to begin until 11:59 p.m. Sunday night. So
okay.
Monday.
Got it.
But that's, you know, pending this hearing. It may change again tomorrow night.
I'm guessing I won't receive any emails starting this Sunday night in my apartment complex. Anyway, that's what's happening. Make sure you go to ttuhub.net. Go check this story out. It's fascinating. It's important. It does affect you. We want you and they want you to be involved in student government. And these students, to their credit, are impassioned enough to try to take on this leadership role and go run for these offices.
In addition to their classes. Yeah, these are just regular students just like me, not you.
And represent.
But like me and them, not like you.
I have nothing to do outside of this.
That's right.
Yeah, they represent their colleges. Some represent the grad school. They have different interests, and they are your representatives. So, again, hats off to them for being willing to take this on.
Now, there is some good news amidst all this. The little bit that we have is last year, 12% of the student body voted. This year, both SGA and the College of Media and Communications, all of our assets, you know, everything we had, KTXT, the Hub, even the Daily Toreador, we all pitched in to try to, you know, raise awareness of the student government vote. SGA especially put a ton of resources into trying to get people to, you know, vote, to take their opinion, because there were two big issues on the ballot, which were tobacco or smoke-free campus and concealed carry inside buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Now, few people know that there actually is concealed handgun carry on campus already. You can't go into a building and you can't go into an awning. There is a bill inside the state legislature that says, you know, what if we let people carry them into buildings? So the Student Government Association has been trying, you know, like putting a ton of effort into getting people's opinions so that, you know, they can send something to the legislature saying Texas Tech feels this way about, you know, handgun licenses. And it was very important for people to vote. This year, 15.2% of the population voted. So while it's a marginal increase, it's obvious that if enough effort is put out there, we can get more people interested in what's going on with student government.
And that's not great, but it's not bad. At least one in six students is taking part, is involved, and I think that's a very good sign.
Yeah, and it can only go up from here.
And if you get contentious issues on the ballot, of course, it's going to drive up turnout. So
right.
Always an interesting issue. I wondered sometimes if people felt as strongly about tobacco on campus as they did about concealed carry inside buildings. But
right.
It's an interesting debate.
Well, sometimes. Actually, according to the town halls I went to, people care pretty strongly about tobacco use on campus.
Yeah, that was my perception, and you went to all of those. By the way, one other media outlet where we covered this, MCOM TV, Media and Communication Television. We produce a live daily newscast every day. Actually, we record it, but Tony joined us and had a live report Monday and then also one day last week about the ongoing contention with SGA.
So you definitely need to check out MCTV on the Hub. It's really awesome.
Yeah, so go to ttuhub.net, look for all of these resources, and then, of course, continue to follow the stories right here on 88.1 The Raider.
So we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back and do our last and favorite segment of the show, the lightning round.
We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
This is the greatest and best song in the world. Tribute. Long time ago, me and my brother Kyle here, we was hitchhiking down a long and lonesome road. All of a sudden, there shined a shiny demon in the middle of the road, and he said, "Play the best song in the world, or I'll eat your soul." Well, me and
some
Kyle.
Music, actually, I haven't heard this song in forever.
This
welcome
is a
back.
New one on me.
This is Tenacious D, right, Jason?
I thought you were Anthony Hall.
Okay. No, stop.
Love Tenacious D.
Stop. Yeah, we like Tenacious D. So, welcome back to the Devil's Advocate here on KTXC, the Radio 88.1. As he was mentioning, I'm Tony, and this is Dr. K.
Hey, gang, how are you?
We are going to finish off the show today with a fun, little, interesting little segment we came up with a couple of weeks
ago.
New
feature we added, just last week. It was Anthony's idea. I like it a lot. It's going to be a regular feature of the show. This will be fun.
It's called The Lightning Round. Yes. Just talking about how much we love that sound effect.
That never gets old. I like it.
So we're going to cover a couple of topics very quickly. Are the same style of the show, just really compressed. Going to go for 2 minutes today.
So we pick an issue, we flip a coin, we take a side. Should we take a side first or pick an issue first?
We should take the side first.
Okay, so I'll flip the coin. I'm going to call it Tails, I'm Liberal. I'm flipping our Chosun.
Juan.
Yeah, exactly. Juan. Heads. All right. So I lost the toss. I
so that means
I'm conservative.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
I'm conservative.
So our first topic is going to be North Korea.
Well, thank God for our ambassador that went there and solved everything.
You mean Dennis Rodman?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So
you want a problem solved, you send the D-Rod, right?
Okay. So here we go. We're going to start the clock. The topic is North Korea has vowed to end the ceasefire between South Korea after the Korean War in 1952.
Which is fascinating. And I don't know if you knew this. Those two countries, North and South Korea, were still at war after all this time. North Korea has one of the world's largest standing armies, a million-man army. It's the most landmined piece of real estate in the world, the demilitarized zone between North and South Korea. And Dennis Rodman somehow made all that go away. It's nonsensical. It's crazy.
Well, you know, when you're a talented basketball player, you can go anywhere and people will respect you.
You're out of the box.
The thing about this is you were conservative, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I get so mixed up doing this.
For a minute and a half, yes.
Yeah, for a minute and a half. Okay, so the issue with this is it is good that we are actually able to send people to North Korea, one of the most locked countries in the world.
Kim Jong-un doesn't like company.
Well, I think he does. He let D-Rod into
his
house.
Well, that's true.
Maybe this is turning over a new leaf.
You know, you don't stop D-Rod if he wants to come in. So that's what I'm thinking.
He's not Kobe Bryant. Oh, I went there. Okay, so it is good that we were able to have these kinds of talks. Now, here is my worry. If we're going to take away the ceasefire, does that mean that open war is going to start again? Can we expect those landmines to be going off sometime
soon? You know, my guess is it's big progress. And who's going to set foot in that metaphorical but landmine? I mean, nobody's going to walk through
that
property. So, no, I don't get it. This is actually good news because the U.S. has been on the hook for decades and has regularly kept 50,000 American troops on the south side, on South Korea, just south of the DMZ. They can see each other across this stretch of land. They look at each other with binoculars. So
it's actually the no man's land, which is actually, you know, I think that's interesting. I would like to see that sometime. It's actually a lot like the Berlin Wall was back before. Is that time?
Time's up.
10 seconds. I have 10 seconds
left. Okay, talk fast.
Okay, like I was saying, the DMZ is a lot like the Berlin Wall was. 4-3. Okay, I'm out of time.
Okay.
It was a nice try.
I think there's hope. All right, next topic. We'll flip a coin again. Let's talk about Latin America, socialism. Hugo Chavez, the Castro brothers, what do you think?
Okay, I'll take heads for liberal.
Okay, heads, you're liberal. Here goes the flip. Tails.
Tails.
Tails, so you're conservative.
Okay.
All right, I get to be liberal this time.
2 minutes.
All right, I think, you know, it's about time they tried some of these economic systems. And obviously, it didn't work in Cuba, but it was because, as in Venezuela, all of the wealth creators took their money and fled. It's like taking the ball and going home, so you can't continue the game. The producers. But Hugo Chavez, who's been very, very sick and is actually in Cuba hanging out with his friend Fidel to get medical care, has been a real visionary. Just won re-election again. He's been in power for 10 years, using oil wealth from Venezuela to feed his starving people. And he's been actually able to largely stabilize a lot of the wealth disparity in Venezuela. And, you know, it's a shame that he's sick and maybe dying, not wild about the oppressiveness of, like, communist regimes like Cuba. But, you know, to some extent, people in Venezuela have still been able to come and go, and there's been some freedom of travel. I think it's not a whole lot different than what Alaska does with its oil revenue. What do you think?
I think that this is actually going to cause us a problem. When you have longtime rulers like the Castros and like Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, especially if Venezuela is on the rise, when these people leave these, you know, socialist or communist countries, there is always some kind of power vacuum left over between the higher-ups and the oligarchy of these
places. By the way,
places.
A ton of those folks who could left and came to South Florida when I was still there.
Can you say that? Can we talk about illegal immigration? Actually, fun fact, if you're from Cuba and you make it to American soil, you are considered a legal immigrant.
Not an issue that was on our topic, but a huge bone of contention among the folks from Haiti and elsewhere in South Florida who do not enjoy that same protection because they're considered economic refugees, not political refugees, like people leaving from communist Castro's Cuba.
Right. So here's like I was saying, there's going to be a huge power vacuum. Once the Castros are out, like if Raul goes, who is going to fill up that vacuum? Is it going to be someone from the Cuban military?
Miguel
somebody
Diaz,
from oh, we're out of time.
Okay, sorry, we're done there. Power vacuum, though, in Cuba, and I've said this before, I think, on this show, Fidel Castro is considered the most important politician in South Florida. All right, immigration.
Okay.
Legal? Illegal?
Legal.
Worker status?
Worker status. That's what we were going to talk about.
We'll talk about all kinds of stuff.
Okay, I like it. Okay, so you get to call it this time.
All right, so I'll call it again. Heads, conservative, Dr. K. Tails, I'm liberal.
Okay, so I get to be conservative again.
It's funny, we've lost every coin toss and it's
here
all
good. Here we go, 2 minutes.
Okay.
So here's my thing.
You're just anti-immigrant. That's your problem.
Yeah, well, wait a second. That's not right. Don't let Claudia hear that.
Yeah, come on.
Okay, so here's the deal. If we're going to reform our immigration system, we have to do it the entire thing. We can't just piecemeal try to patch fix this. It has to be an entirely new thing. We have to start from the ground up and fix both legal and illegal immigration.
A balanced approach like the president always asks for. I like it.
No, a six-point approach as put forth. This is the trigger for today's. Jeb Bush has released a six-point plan to reform immigration.
The third Bush.
Yeah. Okay. And I also heard whispers that Jeb Bush may be looking to 2016 for a presidency.
By the way, Jeb Bush is fluent in Spanish. His wife is a Latina, just so you know.
I did not know that.
Many, many times traveled out of the country. His Spanish is much better than W's Spanish. W knows all the words, but his accent is not quite there. Yes, I went there. Sorry.
We went there. Okay. So the big deal with this is it's a six-point approach that includes retooling the legal immigration system, which includes what they call a demand-driven immigration system.
Sure. Employers need these employees. It's a reasonable, huge contribution. It's jobs that Americans won't do. We clearly need this kind of immigration. We've got to do something with these 11 or 12 million people who are here illegally and are living in a shadow economy.
So Jeb Bush is one of the reds, so to speak, the conservatives that actually...
I always thought those color assignments were backwards, but that's just me.
Well...
Okay, sorry.
You know, considering... And we want to, that's a topic for another show. The thing is that most... conservatives, you know, speaking very broadly, are in favor of strict deportation laws. You know, you come into the country illegally, you get kicked out, which is fair-ish.
Yeah, but not at all respectful of the reality of the economy, which is, again, these are economic refugees. They're coming from places like El Salvador, Mexico. They just cannot find work. They can't find work.
That's time.
And they're out of time to find work, so they better look
That's
fast.
Right. Move fast. Okay, so how much more time do we have left?
A minute left in the program. I think we need to wrap things up. But again, a new feature, Lightning Round. We're going to try to do this often. Listen, jump on social media and send us tweets and suggest topics
That's
for the
right.
Lightning
Round. That's right. You can tweet to us and the radio station at TheRaider881 on Twitter.
And Facebook.com/TheRaider881.
And we even have a new feature, a hashtag, TheRaider.
TheRaider. That's awesome.
That's right. So come back the week after spring break. Yeah. We'll have a great new show for you. We probably won't spend all spring break planning it, but it'll be great. So
we probably finally won't talk much about the sequester. We'll find some new topics for you.
That's right. So have a great spring break, and we'll see you the week after.